This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover a variety of topics in the Umpqua Valley. State Senator David Brock Smith joining us, heading to the Elkton area for the Oregon Small Woodlands Association 2026 convention. He just left the Southern Oregon Showcase down in Medford, and he has located the highest spot of ground somewhere out towards Elkton. So we've got him on the phone. David, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it.
So yesterday, the Governor's Prosperity Council came out with some recommendations. I don't know, with everything else you've had going, if you've had a chance to look at those and maybe share your thoughts about that.
Well, yes, I have had a chance to look at it, not in depth. You know, we were very concerned that the Governor's Prosperity Council was just a election year gimmick, and we still the individuals that were at the table and the business leaders across the state have made recommendations that, frankly, the minority party and that all of us have made in the last few years when it comes to, you know, really re-gearing economic development in the state through Business Oregon. Of course, short-term tax changes. You know, Oregon is one of the highest tax states in the country. Multnomah County and the city of Portland has higher taxes than any other city in the country, directly behind New York City. We have a $1 million threshold on the estate tax in Oregon, which is absolutely ridiculous. And so the recommendation from the Prosperity Council was move that to $3 million, which isn't enough. Of course, when I was in the super minority for the first time in 2019, is when the Democrats passed the corporate activities tax with $1 million threshold. The Prosperity Council's recommendation is to take that to $2 million. But then adjust rates for that tax rate so that it doesn't lose money, which is ridiculous. Expanding tax credits for business research and development spending, as well as going back, and you may remember H.R. 1 from the federal level. The state rolled back some specific portions of H.R. 1. One was the tax base for qualifying small business stocks in Oregon's tax code. They're recommending reversing that decision, as well as we would recommend that they also reverse the hyper depreciation that was included in H.R. 1 that they took away. There's changes that they need to make in regards to permitting. You know, the bureaucratic blue tape in Oregon is absolutely atrocious. And so they recommend that we need to make sure that we have what they call a shot clock. Either it's 30, 60, or 90 days for Oregon agencies to approve permits or deny them, so that we can get projects moving rather than just caught up in the bureaucratic blue tape that is Oregon. They recommend slashing state regulations. I mean, in Oregon alone, we have over 1,400 regulations regulating our hospitals. The average across the country is less than 400, as just one example. And then overhauling the state land use laws. I mean, we've been piling on to Senate Bill 100 that that pretty much set up the land use laws in Oregon over five decades ago, and we haven't really been able to attack those as we need to. And then we need to end the governor's, and it's the recommendation, but end the governor's what they call the CPP, or the Climate Protection Program. As you may remember, Kyle, I helped lead the opposition, Republican opposition, to cap and trade, and we were able to kill that piece of legislation. But then Governor Brown came in and tried to move it through executive order. There is a new lawsuit against that, but the business community agrees that the CPP and how they have it constructed is going to devastate them across the state. And so they recommend that the climate protection program be abolished. They are talking about a cap and invest program, which is very suspect to me, considering the PTSD that I still have from that work in my early years in the legislature. They talk about the opportunity for a governor's cabinet on economic and talent development to help lead efforts with the K-12 education outcomes, because, as we know, our education across the state is lacking, and we're still 47th, 48th in the country in many ways. Oregon ranks 37th nationally in higher education. This is for higher education, however. And the appropriation per full-time student invests 24% less in students than a national average. And so when we're looking at the HEC, the Higher Education Coordinating Council, and the lack of confidence in them, we're looking at overhauling higher education as well. And so that was some of the recommendations that they rolled out, Kyle.
So one of the things I've not seen so far is any response to that from the governor's office. Have you heard anything from that end?
I have not. I know that House Republican leader Lucetta Elmer sent out a press release yesterday, which you probably saw.
Right. I saw that. So we'll see what happens next on that. And that'll be interesting to watch as we go through and get closer to the election cycle. Now, we mentioned this at the front end. You're heading almost over to Elkton right now. You're almost to Elkton, where the event's going on this afternoon. Tell us a little bit about what's happening over there.
Yeah, it's the Small Woodlands Association annual conference at the Big K Ranch here in they, you know, the small woodland owners in my Senate district, we have more small woodland owners than any other district in the state. They're a driving force for us. I've worked on and, of course, helped draft and pass legislation that benefited them. In fact, I was honored by them last year to receive their first ever award for a legislator. For passing legislation that exempted up to $15 million in estate tax for small woodland owners. I mean, we did it for farmers in the state, and we tried to do it for the small woodland owners as well, and we needed to fix it in 25. You know, you have these large landowners, like the small woodland owners, that have these assets and they're farmers. They were stuck at the $1 million threshold as well, many of which, when your family member dies that owns the property, they were having to sell off portions, if not all, of the of their farm and or small woodland operation in order to pay the taxes. Which isn't something that we want to do in Oregon. And so we were able to pass legislation, again, that exempts them up to $15 million when that happens. And so Dan Newton, fantastic guy, current president of the Small Woodlands Association of Oregon, Oregon Small Woodlands Association, invited me up, and I'm happy to attend. I headed over to Roseburg, Medford Wednesday afternoon for the Southern Oregon Showcase, put on by the Rogue Valley Chamber of Commerce. We were able to meet with business owners and listen to them about, again, as I travel around the state, Medford is no different. You know, the increasing taxes, the bureaucratic blue tape, and the lack of any movement on regulation and just the piling on of regulation is hurting small businesses and large businesses across Oregon. And so I'm glad the Prosperity Council has come through with some recommendations. And I just hope that the Democrats that run this state are listening, because it's similar to the same conversations that Republicans, many of which, like myself, have signed both sides of the paycheck, where Democrats haven't, will understand.
Want to hit a number of other things here in the next 10 minutes or so. Let's kind of switch gears a bit. In the middle of all the things you're doing in the legislature, you're also running for the U.S. Senate. Got the Republican nomination, facing off with longtime incumbent Senator Jeff Merkley. What do you think the top issues are that are driving that race?
Well, the top issues that are driving this United States Senate race against Merkley are the same issues that are driving the governor's race with Christine against Tina Kotek. You have situations where Oregonians are just hammered with affordability issues. And frankly, the United States Senate tried to address some of those issues with the work that they did with the House with H.R. 1 that our Democrat senators voted against. They've been driving Oregon politics with Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley for decades in the U.S. Senate for Oregon. They're still pushing hard on renewable energy, basically including misinformation to Oregonians that it's cheaper when it's not. They're penalizing Oregonians that want to continue utilizing natural gas, which is incredibly unfortunate. And it is going to drive up the cost of energy across the state. City of Bend, for example, just put on a $3,000 natural gas fee for any new construction that is going to have any natural gas appliances, which is absolutely ridiculous. As we have continued changing weather conditions across the landscape, the last thing we need is to have situations where we're driving away from energy that is reliable, that can keep people warm, and can also, more importantly, produce energy in the hotness of summer when we need that energy to run cooling systems across the state. The other issue, of course, is Iran and the rising prices and affordability for Oregonians. I'm thankful that President Trump is moving forward and signed the MOU so that we get some resolution there. I was more hopeful that we'd be able to really end the Islamic regime there that is the number one sponsor of terror in the world and give the Persians back their country so that they can thrive in a free society. Unfortunately, I believe that this agreement is going to fall short of that, but I look forward to getting back to normalcy when it comes to fuel prices and affordability for Oregonians. We have a lot of challenges in this state when it comes to health care, as one example. And frankly, it's the hospital. We've tried to push back against the Oregon Nurses Association that have forced med-surg nursing staffing ratios from 1 to 5. That is implemented here July 1st. That's going to cost Mercy $5 million a year in additional resources. They're not going to be able to generate more resources to cover it, because they can't have more surgeries. They're already maxed out. So you're in a situation where the payer mix with regards to insurers versus Oregon Health Plan, Medicaid, is still low. And it's all kind of cyclical, right, Kyle? So we need to open up Oregon for business so that we can have more private corporations be able to create jobs and therefore have the opportunities to hire and employ more staff that have private insurance that then increases the payer mix across the board so that we can have opportunities for those payer mix individuals to be insured and utilize our medical services that then pay a higher rate to fund healthcare in our hospitals and rural communities.
Back to the race against Merkley, taking on a sitting U.S. senator from either party is a pretty tough task. How's the financial part of this race going for you at this point?
It's good. I mean, people are excited. I mean, let's face it, Senator Merkley was the went in the legislature in 99 and then was Speaker of the House, the Oregon House of Representatives in 2007, ran against former Senator Gordon Smith, Republican, in 2008, and he's never had a real challenger. Senator Merkley hasn't had anyone with my experience, and not only the local level, an elected office, but now as our state senator, been engaged in the process and in issues across the state, from wolf management and creating the state meat inspection program for Oregon and our ranchers across Oregon, from eastern Oregon, to fighting for our veterans and the $35 million that we were able to secure for the third veterans home to be built in Roseburg, that frankly, if our Oregon Senate delegation were able to just do anything in a bipartisan way, we might be able to get the $65 million from the federal government to get that project on the books and going. And I'm known in the Oregon legislature for getting things done. I solve problems across the state, and that resonates with people. And so they're excited to have a qualified candidate to run against Merkley. And we are raising the resources. You can never raise enough. And we have limitations in what we could raise. I mean, I'm limited at $3,500 a person. Limited to where, you know, big corporations and so forth can't give. So it's literally people across the state opening their personal checkbooks and writing up to $3,500 to fund the campaign. I just need to buckle down and make those calls and create those kitchen tables, if you will, and have those conversations and talk about our campaign and our plan and path to win in November.
What about relationships in Washington, D.C.? While you've been working in the legislature and on the South Coast, do you already have connections back there that will help you out if you are elected?
Oh, of course. I mean, I you know, we've, of course, been in contact with the NSRC, the National Republican Senate Committee, the NRSC. You know, I House, and then when he was Senate before he went to the U.S. House of Representatives. I've been in the legislature for nearly a decade and have created relationships from here to Washington. I mean, we're working, as we've talked about, state gets west in our work with wildfire preparedness and, you know, and assisting in the conversations and the administration moving USFS BLM operations to Utah, where our forests are here in the West. And so I have a conference for CSG West in next month, first part of next month in Salt Lake City. I'm looking forward to having conversations with our Western state legislators and congressional delegation while we're there. And continue to move forward. So, yes, it's been pretty beneficial with the conversations. And my team from D.C. is plugged in and has been for years. So,
About a minute left on Inside Douglas County. State Senator David Brock Smith, what's ahead for you in the next few days?
Well, I'll be cruising in here to the Small Woodlands Association annual conference. I'll be with them the rest of the afternoon and dinner tonight, and then I'll head home back to Port Orford, and then have a memorial service in the morning for a gentleman that I was a great community member, and then head back over to Roseburg, to Melrose Vineyards, tomorrow afternoon for the Douglas County Republican Central Committee meeting, summer Reagan dinner and barbecue with Representative Osborne and our county commissioners, and of course Sheriff Hanlon and others, and look forward to seeing everyone. And then it's off to the CSG West conference after 4th of July. And my mom I won't be in Douglas County for 4th of July. My mother is going to be the 250th anniversary Jubilee Queen. So.
All right, very good. State Senator David Brock Smith, we'll check it again soon. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Kyle. Have a wonderful weekend.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. It's presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.